This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, November 10th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, the Environmental Almanac and a look at sustainability and how we plan for our future. Also coming up, a weekend forecast. Speaking of planning for the future, from meteorologist Ed Kieser, now a look at today's news. The president of the University of Illinois has a five-year goal to raise money in order for faculty salaries to be competitive. More on that story from Kavitha Cardoza.
The average faculty salary at none of the three campuses falls in the top one-third bracket compared to peer universities. President Joseph White says this is a problem in retaining faculty who are routinely recruited to other top schools in the country. He said faculty is the most important resource a university has, and it's important they be paid competitively because the quality of the university is at stake.
I've often said that you don't have to be the richest to be the best. An institution can be the most innovative, the most exciting, the fastest moving, the most responsive, and people love that and they want to be part of organizations like that. But I reminded the board that I also have to say you have to be rich enough to be the best.
White said they needed over $185 million. He said the money would have to come from the state, student tuition, grants, and private sources. I'm Kavitha Cardoza.
Catholic authorities have dismissed a man from the priesthood 2 years after he was accused of the sexual abuse of minors. The Diocese of Peoria says Reverend Monsignor Thomas Miller has been dismissed from the clerical state and is barred from performing any priestly duties. Miller was a parish priest in Peoria until he was put on administrative leave 2 years ago. Previously, he served at Schlarman High School in Danville and Holy Trinity Parish in Bloomington. In a news release, the diocese says Miller was dismissed from the priesthood by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in Rome, which found him guilty of the sexual abuse allegations. Miller has 30 days to appeal, but his dismissal is effective immediately. Governor Rob Blagojevich says the first priority of his second term is to raise the minimum wage. Blagojevich stopped in southern Illinois yesterday during a tour to rally support for his plan to boost the minimum wage by $1 to $7.50 an hour. He also wants that wage to be indexed to inflation, meaning annual increases as the cost of living rises. Blagojevich says his goal is to create opportunities for people to work.
The work that you do ought to not just be honored, it ought to not just be recognized, it ought to be rewarded. You ought to be able to put in a good day's work and get a good day's pay. That's not just what makes sense. It's the right thing to do.
The governor's proposal has the backing of labor leaders. Blagojevich wants state lawmakers to pass the measure during the fall veto session, which begins Tuesday. Illinois will be well represented in the leadership of the new Congress, but one observer isn't so sure that that presence will translate into more federal spending here. In January, House Speaker Dennis Hastert will become a rank-and-file representative again. University of Illinois political science professor Brian Gaines says there probably won't be an Illinois congressman with as much stature, although Rahm Emanuel, the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, may come close.
He's relatively junior. He was elected only in 2002, and the Democrats have tended to be more deferential to seniority than the Republicans. So it strikes me that his position isn't really one that has the same kind of cachet as being a chairman of appropriations or Speaker or Majority Floor Leader or Whip or any of those.
Gaines says the Illinois Democrat with the highest leadership position may be Jerry Costello of the Metro East, who may be in line to head the House Science Committee. Senator Dick Durbin is the second-ranking Democrat in the Senate, but Gaines says Senate leaders can't wield as much control over the agenda as House leaders do. One of the leading advocates behind Peoria's attempted buyout of its water system says Illinois American Water Company has communities dragging by their ankles. Terry Kolbus heads the Tri-County Regional Planning Commission. He says a $220 million appraised figure that Peoria faced for buying its water system was too high, driving away city council members, as well as citizens who had voted down an advisory referendum last year. Other communities under Illinois American, including Champaign-Urbana, are exploring the same move by using eminent domain powers. City officials have complained about malfunctioning hydrants and service disruptions that prompted boil orders last year, but Kolba says resistance to change makes them hesitant.
These systems are privately owned. If this is what you grew up with, this is what you think is natural and normal. And the idea of having somebody else take it over is just a change that a lot of folks are not comfortable with.
Barry Suits of Illinois American says customer surveys there show most Champaign-Urbana residents are happy with the service. And he says it seems odd that someone from Peoria would tell Champaign-Urbana's customers whether they're happy with the water company. Urbana Mayor Laurel Prussing says talks continue with Champaign to study the cost and benefits of a water buyout. Kolba spoke to the Champaign County League of Women Voters yesterday. A school district's crackdown in Park County, Indiana, on unpaid lunch bills has angered some parents because children have been forced to the end of the cafeteria line and given cold sandwiches rather than hot lunches. Officials at the Southwest Park Community Schools put the policy in place about a month ago after overdue bills grew to $1,500 in the first weeks of school. Laura Bird says her two nephews at Rosedale Elementary had to go near the end of the lunch line and were given a lunch of an egg salad sandwich and milk. Bird said the district should go after the parents instead of embarrassing children. The boy's mother owed about $80 from last year. The boy's grandmother has since paid the debt, and the boys now eat normal lunches. For the latest newscast online, go to WILL.UIUC.EDU/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. The idea of sustainability has become a more and more popular idea in many areas, including urban and regional planning. In the Environmental Almanac this week, Rob Cantor leads us through the five guiding principles of sustainability.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or picking up broccoli at a farmer's market, you're more likely than ever before to be confronted with the idea of sustainability in the choices you make. But have you ever stopped to wonder where our current focus on sustainability comes from? I have. So I checked in recently with Rumi Shaman, who's in the final stages of completing his doctoral dissertation on ways to implement sustainability in urban and regional planning. He knows as well as anyone the many ways the term sustainability has been defined and redefined in the past couple of decades. Shaman points out that the current interest in sustainability has its roots in the 1960s. However, widespread use of the concept was prompted by a 1987 report commissioned by the United Nations to re-examine critical environmental and development problems and to formulate realistic proposals to solve them. That report defines sustainable development as development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. For the purposes of his work, Shaman has combined the key elements others have used to define sustainability in subsequent years in a more comprehensive definition. In his terms, sustainability means ensuring that critical social, economic, and ecological processes are maintained in a way so that both the short and long-term quality of life of human societies and the health and diversity of natural ecosystems are not compromised, and the scale of human activities is kept within the natural carrying capacity of the environment. Now, that definition covers a lot of territory. In order to develop a framework for applying it, Shaman breaks it down into five guiding principles. The first principle asserts that humans exist neither above nor outside of nature, and that there are limits on the Earth's capacity to provide resources and accept waste. Principle 2 tells us that in recent years, we have begun to approach these limits very quickly. The third principle defines development as improving quality of human life in three dimensions: economic, social, and environmental. Shaman emphasizes that while development is typically equated with economic growth alone, human needs are often better satisfied by an improved environment and opportunities for a safe, engaged social life. This possibility is commonly ignored in the planning process. The fourth principle draws attention to equity in the way the Earth's resources and capacities to process waste are used. This implies an obligation to allow others of our own generation access to the quality of life that we look for ourselves, and an obligation to future generations that our activities do not diminish their opportunities. This obligation also extends to the other species that we share the earth with. The fifth principle of sustainability stresses that local behavior and global development are inextricably intertwined. For example, many of the clothes we wear and the foods we eat come from around the world, and so our choices in these matters have impacts in faraway places. So too with other activities that have even greater aggregate impacts, our individual contributions to global warming, for example. Shaman emphasizes that these five principles of sustainability are deliberately broad so that they can be adapted for specific purposes in different local contexts. Tune in next week to hear how they can be applied in ecological footprint analysis, which is designed to help people gauge the sustainability of their own activities.
Rob Cantor is a writer with the UIUC Environmental Council. To find out more about Environmental Almanac or to listen to it again, follow the links on our website at will.uiuc.edu. Support for Environmental Almanac comes from the UIUC Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. Rain is in our forecast today, but the weekend will be improving. We'll see sunshine across the two states by Sunday. But we have to get through today. Meteorologist Ed Kieser says in western Illinois it'll be mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms from late morning on. In eastern Illinois and northwest Indiana, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. And in southeastern Indiana, partly to mostly sunny still. Highs from 42 in far northwest Illinois to 75 in the far south. For tonight, cloudy with widespread areas of rain. Lows from 27 in northwest Illinois to 47 in southeast Indiana. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny and cool in western Illinois. In eastern Illinois and far west Indiana, cloudy with scattered showers early, then becoming mostly sunny tomorrow afternoon. Elsewhere in Indiana, still cloudy with scattered showers. Highs from 37 in northwest Illinois to only around 50 in southeast Indiana. And for Sunday, mostly sunny, and highs mostly in the 40s north and in the 50s central and south. Clouds will move in again Monday and Tuesday. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, November 10th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.